This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, a look at second chance programs for those who've served time in jails or prisons. Starting us off this afternoon, cyber attacks last year exposed the records of millions of Americans. Hackers are going after both personal users and the data systems of large corporations to steal information. Cybersecurity experts are holding the B-Sides Cincinnati Conference here next week to share information on internet and data system security. And joining us to discuss the upcoming conference, the growing risk of cyber threats, and the increasing need for cybersecurity are Cincinnati Bell Technology Solutions Director for Security Services, Justin Hall, Morphic Lead Responder and Post-Sales Engineer, Tony Hudson, and Threat Intel Leader with Ashland Incorporated, Nate Hosrath. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tony, Justin, and Nate, good to see you this afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Justin, how big of an issue has cybercrime become?
Well, I don't think there are very many folks that are not at least somewhat cognizant of cybercrime when they're sitting in front of their computer or pulling up their phone and thinking about, is my data safe? Is the company that I'm working with and I'm buying from, you know, your Amazons or whatever, are they handling my data safely? Is this going to get stolen? I think average people are thinking about it. Businesses are certainly thinking about it. How can I protect my customers' data? How can I protect my information, my financial information? So everybody's thinking about it, certainly, because there have been so many breaches, so much data that has been stolen, so much harm that's been done, and it's all been public in the last 10 years. Everybody's aware of it.
It seems like it's also almost become a daily thing.
Yeah. It used to be, you know, once a year there would be a big breach, and folks like us in the industry would get really, you know, excited and get to read about it and see what the attackers did. Now it's, you know, on, you know, the front page of news outlets every other day.
Nate, how fast is this growing? How fast is cybercrime?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think as Justin said, I mean, you know, every year now we've seen a huge increase in the number of attacks, number of breaches, and you know, not only have they increased in the number of breaches, but also some of the size and scope of these breaches. You know, we can look at the Target breach from a couple of years ago, and you know how many millions of credit cards did they lose? And that was a huge incident, a huge learning experience for a lot of people, because you know, many other companies were able to, you know, kind of sit back and take note of this and learn from their mistakes, essentially. And so, yeah, it really shed a lot of light on this industry.
And there's been a breach on a major health insurer, and there's been a breach on government employees' information. So it seems like it's just something that's becoming more and more common. Who's the typical cyber criminal these days? Any thoughts on that, Tony?
All across the board. So you've got nation states trying to get data. You've got actors that are just trying to make money, trying to pump and dump credit cards, any kind of personal information they can get a hold of. And then you've got sort of like the bottom feeders that are handing off your personal information just so that other crime groups can target people more effectively. So you've got people selling email addresses and phone numbers just to become part of other scams.
Oh, so
fraudsters.
So this is more than just about identity theft. There's a lot of reasons that they're doing this.
100%, yeah. I mean, there's anything from trade secrets, intellectual property, to, you know, I need to know people's email addresses that are in a certain geographic region.
Yeah, every company has something that's valuable. Every person has something that's valuable. You know, most organizations, they, if nothing else, they have employee personal information that they are responsible to protect. If you deal with your business, you deal with other businesses. You have their information to protect. If you create something that nobody else creates, you have intellectual property. You have financial information, credit cards. Personally, you know, your individuals, your home users, they have their usernames and passwords to protect. They have their financial information, their family's information. So everybody's got something valuable. And I think folks have really realized, the attackers have realized in the last decade, hey, we can steal that. We can make money off of that. And so that's why you've seen this uptick in attacks. It used to be just about, let's destroy, let's delete things with our malware.
So it used to be about disrupting things, disruption.
Yeah. Or let's cause damage. Let's just show off our technical skills. And that's where that idea of the kid in his basement came from, what we call in the industry the script kiddie. the unskilled attacker that stole somebody else's code or somebody else's attack methods and reused them. And those days are gone. It's become big business, and not just for criminals, but for nation states. Like Tony said, you have well-funded groups inside of that are operating sanctioned by governments trying to steal data and gain advantage over other nations.
Yeah, along with that too. I mean, a lot of these, as you mentioned, it's become a big business. A lot of the criminal groups out there, they legitimately operate as a business now. You'll have a delivery service that's responsible for taking a piece of malware, packaging it up, and sending it out to all these numbers of email addresses out there. They're not necessarily the ones behind the malware, but they're kind of the middleman. You have these groups that actually recruit via recruiting websites, and they advertise more as like legitimate software development positions, but with kind of a little twist, and tend to be Eastern European countries, that sort of thing. But you'll have like we need a low level C developer for this certain thing, and that's how you would advertise normally as a business, and so they'll get a lot of responses that way. Yeah, and they're all driven by their bottom line too. So if they're not making money, then they're going to change what they're doing.
So where is most of this hacking coming from? Are there hotbeds of hackers in the world?
The United States is a lot of it, honest. To be honest,
that's interesting.
Nationally, we've pointed the finger at China as the biggest culprit, and they certainly are. The most rampant, I think, that we've seen. But plenty of countries have reason to try to. If we think about the theft of data from American companies and from the U.S. government, plenty of organizations and nation states have reason to try to steal that data. And usually it's to get competitive advantage. But, plenty of times it's just let's try to get money. Let's try to, get better ways to commit fraud, that type of thing.
So greed drives a lot of this.
Absolutely. It's everybody's connected. Everybody's got, some personal information online. And so why not try? Criminals have figured out it's easier to do this than knock over a bank or try to physically break into a building and steal, documents. This stuff's all way easily accessible because everything is the infrastructure is probably not secured sufficiently to protect it.
So the United States is a hot spot for this. And what about other parts of the world?
China, certainly, as Justin mentioned, Russia, Eastern Europe. They're typically associated with a lot of your cybercrime activity. But other places too, like Nigeria, not only with your normal scam emails, but they've actually become a bit more sophisticated in some of their attacks, in that they actually try to penetrate a company, compromise individuals, and then move throughout the company, which you haven't typically seen from that country or that part of the world. Mm-hmm. So
these guys are getting more and more clever.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The techniques that were employed in the late 90s to break into the United States government have been disseminated out so that the average attacker, you, Mark, if you ever decided you wanted to go into
– I've often thought of this.
Get into the hacking business.
I missed a career opportunity.
Yeah. Let's jump in. Easy way to make money. You could go and find the tools and learn the techniques pretty easily and sort of deploy those. And again, these are tools and techniques that have been used by, some of the world's best attackers are now readily available to anybody.
Is it possible for a corporation to have a truly unhackable system or is it just does it just take constant vigilance?
It's possible. You just wouldn't be able to do anything.
Yeah, you unplug from the
internet.
You
wouldn't be able to complete any business tasks.
It would be so complicated you couldn't even use your own system.
Yes,
is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Tony, what's it like for you? I mean, being a responder, I'd say it's probably true of all three of you. This is pretty much a 24/7 business, isn't it?
It is, 100%. I'm ready all the time to receive a call and have to end up at a company and help them respond to a breach incident. People get external notifications all the time. There's, companies everywhere. All the time getting notifications that something's happening on their network and they need to do something about it.
Yeah, you ever feel like you're a police officer or a superhero of some kind?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
He's definitely a superhero.
Superhero, no doubt. You guys are terrible.
No, but I mean, he's right, though. being notified externally is probably the worst way to be notified of a breach. And that means that you've failed in all your security controls. Your team, if you have a team, hasn't picked up what was happening in your network. And some external, you know, three-letter agency is the one that is actually telling you that you have a problem. And then it's a mad scramble, and it's very costly to remediate that and to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. And as a person, right, you receive a breach notification. It's usually, hey, we're going to give you a year of free credit monitoring, right, from Anthem or Target or TJ Maxx or any of those examples where they had to notify their customers that, hey, we lost your data. It's gone. Someone else has it. And those companies need to be protected.
So. Yeah, so you're saying instead of being preventive, they now have to react to what's happened. And that's more often than not what happens with cybersecurity. You're reacting as opposed to preventing? Or
yep.
Yeah.
I'd say so.
You know, we traditionally, my team focuses on the proactive, on how to develop and build security programs. And that's still very new. You know, there are, you know, only the kind of most, you know, mature organizations have figured out a way to grow their security practice so that they are doing everything they need to do to protect themselves. And a lot of them, they only did it after they got breached.
Yeah.
Finally, they realized at that point, okay, well, we lost this one, but we got to get ready for the next one.
So once that three-letter agency says you've been breached, what's the next thing you do, Nate?
Well, I mean, you can – well, I'd say you start with calling a company like Morphic or, you know, you've heard of some of the others out there, but you would call them to come in and help you figure out what's going on. And that's probably only if your own internal security team isn't up to the task. But beyond that, you know, once you've kind of got through the fire of that initial notification and kind of triage, then you have to assess yourself as a company. You know, do we need to really stand up a better program? How do we stand up a better program? You know, what's the type of talent we need to do this? That is one of the big issues, though, in the industry, is that we really do lack the number of people that are talented people to get the job done appropriately. So,
how often is it the case that you're talking about you get notification or you figure out you've been hacked, but how often does it happen where you don't know you've been hacked until much, much later? How common is that?
It's pretty common. There are a couple of industry groups and big tech companies like Verizon and Microsoft that release regular threat reports. They describe the state of the industry and everything that they know about the current state of things. And the one trend that has really happened in the past, continued in the past several years, is that that the time to discover a notification has been very long. Sometimes it's weeks, months. In some cases, customers that we've worked with, it has been years, as in a company was breached and we didn't discover that they actually were in the organization or what they stole or how they got in until a couple of years later. And there are plenty of organizations in, you know, the greater Cincinnati area, I would think, that have been breached, don't know it, you know, they might not ever know it if they don't look carefully enough or they aren't ever notified.
Mm. We'll continue our conversation about cybersecurity. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, as we talk about data security, CBTS Director for Security Services Justin Hall, Morphic Lead Responder and Post-Sales Engineer Tony Hudson, and Threat Intel Leader with Ashland Incorporated, Nate Hosrath. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'm curious about ransomware. I mean, I've been hearing more and more about that. That's one of the newer problems that's cropping up, I take it?
Yeah, that's right. You know, more folks have heard about it because ransomware is, again, it works. Attackers do what works, and they've figured out that people will pay ransom to get their data back. And so they've built more ransomware. They've found better ways to distribute it that have been more successful. More people are paying the ransom.
So, Tony, what's an example of ransomware? What exactly happens with this?
There's probably 90 to 100 different versions now of ransomware that exist. But the classic case is, you know, the installation methods are the same as what malware has always been, right? It's either a phish attempt. It's something that comes in your email, you click a link, or it happens via your browser through an exploit or a drive-by download, something like that. So software gets installed on your computer. It begins encrypting files. You then get a pop-up message that says, your files are encrypted. If you want them back, you're going to need to pay us in Bitcoin in a secure money format where it can't be traced.
So it's typically it's some kind of a threat. Tells you have to respond to this threat somehow and pay us to fix it or get your computer back. So that's ransomware.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, your files are actually encrypted. So you can't have access to your own data that's there local on your hard drive until you pay the ransom to get the decryption key to unlock the files.
How common is this becoming?
Oh, it's all over the place.
Extremely.
Yeah. I mean, companies everywhere. It's probably one of the biggest things I hear now in terms of what companies and individuals are struggling with, whether it's, your grandma or your aunt to, major corporations. And as Tony said, really the only way to get around this is to have great backups. So if you're a company or an individual and you have a great backup plan that's off-site and not connected to your computer, the ransomware isn't going to go out there or isn't able to go out there and encrypt that. Either that or pay. And, one of the issues with the payment these days is it's typically maybe around $300, something like that. The bad guys haven't really figured out how much they can charge. So when they compromise, a system that has all of your company's intellectual property on it and encrypt that with ransomware, that costs $300. I think what we'll see maybe in the future is that they'll actually try to figure out what they have, what did they compromise, is it in a company, and then maybe start charging some more.
So figure out the value of what it's worth and then charge what they
Yep.
So it's constantly changing. How do companies keep up with this? How well are they keeping up with all this stuff?
It's been really great to see more and more organizations taking it seriously. And some have done so because they are required to by law. HIPAA is a law that healthcare companies have to follow, and they have to prove that they've taken reasonable security measures. If you want to do business with Visa, you have to prove that you're following their payment card industry standards that require certain security measures to be in place. And so that's forced a lot of companies to take it seriously. Others have been breached, and they've taken it seriously after that. And they continue to grow in their knowledge, and they continue to follow what are the threats that are out there and how do I respond to them? How do we protect ourselves? What technology do we need? What tools, what processes and business procedures should we have in place? And what people? And it really does come down to smart people that understand the threats and know how to stop them.
Now, how much talent's out there? I think Nate mentioned that there's a shortage of talent to deal with this.
Yeah, there really is. And again, another encouraging thing that we've seen has been the adoption of cybersecurity curriculums by local universities. NKU has been the sort of area leader, Northern Kentucky University. UC has started up a program that's gotten really popular. University of Cincinnati has, and I think the other universities are starting to follow suit because they see this giant gap of talent. We just don't have enough people. Like, we've had negative unemployment in our industry for years, and so we need more.
So what are things that that companies can do? What are some basic things they can do as far as protecting their data?
User awareness, I would say, is number one. Just making sure people know not to click the links. When you receive an email, you don't know who it's from. It doesn't quite make sense to you. There's something fishy about it. Escalate it to your IT staff, your security team if you have one. That's number one. I would say most attacks occur. The initial attack vector is via email.
Yeah, I mean, that's correct. Regardless of that, too, you still, even the recent Verizon report points out that 23% of your users will still open a phish, and 11% will still open an attachment, even with user awareness training. And, we found that with our own testing internally.
We preach defense in depth, and that means knowing that there are phishing attacks coming in and knowing that some users are going to click on those links and you're still going to get compromised. You need to have other defenses, other technical things in place, filtering your users' internet traffic to protect them from going to bad sites, filtering your inbound email. But it's also not all about defenses. We also believe that you're going to get breached eventually. If an attacker wants your data bad enough, they're going to get in. Similar to robbing a bank, if somebody wants to rob a bank bad enough, they're going to find a way in. It may take them a lot of time and a lot of resources, but they're going to find a way. And so defense is useful. Being able to respond effectively is also incredibly valuable.
Justin, any idea how many company data breaches are because of employee personal devices?
It certainly it's certainly grown as more folks are bringing in cell phones from home and using them to access some, you know, customer work data. Get my work email on my phone, log into my work applications from my phone, from my tablet, access it from my home computer. Those are a lot of threats that are not, you know, effectively monitored by a lot of companies. And so trusting the users to kind of handle their own security is a little dangerous, I think, for an organization. But again, they've in the last couple of years, you've seen organizations really step up and say, we're going to enforce more control over these devices and protect ourselves from those threats.
So is it a good idea, like if you're a business traveler, you're in an airport, should you log off of the Wi-Fi there just to be safe?
I mean, I think people are going to do that regardless. I think you encourage them to connect to their company VPN if they're going to do that. I think as security professionals and as, you know, part of an internal company security team, we have to be enablers for the business. So we have to be able to protect them, but also enable them to do business where they need to do business. And that includes the airport. That includes, you know, hotel Wi-Fi, you know, whatever they need to do. I think, as Justin said, you have to stand up not only defenses, you know, preventative tools, things like that, but you also have to have tools that are built for detection. And whether those are vendor-provided tools or whether they're custom in-house tools, we certainly have our fair share of custom tools that we've created. And then, you know, you have to have a team that's monitoring that and watching for bad outside of, you know, your normal circumstances.
What about the individual level? Are there things individuals can do as far as protecting themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. The most common threat is not necessarily somebody downloading a piece of malware. We've been using the term malware. That's just bad software, evil software, software that's meant to harm. It really is being careful with how you operate online. Obviously, we've been talking about phishing a lot and not clicking links from untrusted emails, but many organizations require a username and password for you to log into their website. And we started creating usernames and passwords everywhere. Most people have dozens and dozens of them, and they just reuse those usernames and passwords. And so if one of those sites gets their user database stolen, the attacker could then reuse your information to log into your email. So it's about protecting your personal logins and passwords, using two-factor authentication where that's available. And that's, you know, most personal email providers have enabled that. Amazon has that now. So iCloud has it. Go turn on two-factor authentication. If I can give, you know, your viewers or listeners one tip, it really is use two-factor authentication where you can, or multi-step authentication, as it's called sometimes.
What about creating passwords? I mean, it seems like I know mine are pretty lame. Most people don't do very well at creating these. No. What's some advice for creating a good password?
Well, minimum number of characters. You got numbers, special characters. There's a lot of information out there on length, how long it takes to break that password.
But for your average user, I feel like they, you know, it almost doesn't matter because you can, if the user database gets stolen from a breach, most attackers aren't cracking passwords anymore. They're just stealing them wholesale from a breach. We like passphrases. Pick three random words, you know, carpet, microphone, mouse. That's a long password. That's three random words. You can pick any three random words you want and use three random words for every password that you have.
You can also use a service like LastPass,
yeah.
Something that plugs into your browser and generates a random password for every, you know, website that you log into.
And what's that called, Nate?
It's called LastPass.
Okay. So are we getting any better at this, though? You see any signs of hope that we're improving at dealing with this issue?
Justin mentioned the breach reports. I think the one positive from those breach reports is that if you look at them from 4 years ago, maybe the mean time to solve your breach issue or find your breach was 400 days, let's say. I think the last report that I read, it said something like 90 days. So at least the gap is closing a little bit on discovering breaches.
Yeah.
But I think overall, companies that need to have security teams are attempting to build those teams out and finding the right tools and technologies to protect their customers' data.
Yeah,
I would say for your home users, you have one of the most common breaches a home user is going to experience is having their identity stolen. And that might happen because someone has broken into an organization that has a bunch of personal information, you know, your date of birth, your social, your address, and that's enough to clone your identity and then go get credit on your behalf. But fraud monitoring has gotten way more widespread. Retailers are getting way better at detecting fraud and stopping it before it gets out of hand. The credit monitoring bureaus have gotten much better at handling those cases and notifying people. So today, it's easier to recover from identity theft than it ever has been before.
Yeah, I'd say one other thing, too, is sharing groups are extremely important. There are specific industry sharing groups where, like industries like retail or, you know, chemical or defense, they share, I guess, tactical information about threats that they're seeing. And that, you know, from my perspective of an intelligence person, is extremely valuable because I know what's going on out there in my industries and what I should be looking for. And so, you know, the different groups are in various stages of maturity, but, you know, I think people are starting to really recognize that it's an important thing to share information when you get it. It helps everyone, and it's really not damaging. I mean, there's some pushback on, you know, oh, is it okay if I share this sensitive thing that is, you know, maybe it was an incident in my company. But it turns out because everybody's getting breached or everybody's getting attacked, that it's really not that valuable to keep that close to your chest, and you're not going to be, you know, damaged by that.
Does the Internet of Things and the connected devices that we have in our home, does that pose any more of a risk for people? Does that create more opportunities for people who want to hack?
Certainly. You know, I think there's a rush to put those types of products out on the market because they're cool and interesting and, you know, you can get a notification from your fridge when your water filter needs changing or something like that. But I don't know if the risk-reward trade-off is there. I think you have companies putting them out without effectively securing those devices, and so it'll leave a gap. Most people have a home wireless network now. Is it effectively protected? Maybe, if an attacker is able to get on your network and use one of those devices as a place to attack from. That's kind of a, you know, an edge case. I don't think that happens all that often, but I think manufacturers could certainly exercise more caution in the products that they put out and do better security testing to make sure there aren't big vulnerabilities in their smart appliances. And certainly at the enterprise level, we see that too. We see organizations deploying those types of devices that are connected and can talk on the network, but maybe see very little oversight.
So what do you do? What's a consumer to do with that?
I think it's, again, do some research before you buy. You know, when you want to buy a new connected device, even a new cell phone or a new, you know, piece of home networking gear, do some research. See what the security results are. You know, when if they've been tested, if the company that makes the product has published them, just like you would before buying a car or any other kind of appliance, or you may just, you know, do your due diligence. Make sure what you're putting in your home and connecting to your network is safe.
So, Justin, B-Sides Conference coming up on May 21st.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What's going to be discussed there?
Yeah, you know, this is our third year. All three of us are on the organizing committee, and we put together, what we think is going to be a really great day. We hold B-Sides to show off local talent. There's so much local information security talent, and so it's an opportunity for, folks from all around the area to come and hear those speakers talk about interesting things that they've found, research that they're doing, case studies, new tools that they've built. It's a great place if you're a student. It's a great place if you're a practitioner or just an IT, or if you just find this stuff interesting. You can come and listen to folks talk about the latest and greatest trends and tools and technologies and information security.
Now, this one's sold out in Cincinnati, right?
It is.
But these are held around the country, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Security B-Sides, BSIDES.com is where all of the B-Sides conferences are listed. And if there's a major American city or a city around the world, they probably have one.
Well, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
CBTS Director for Security Services Justin Hall, Morphic Lead Responder and Post Sales Engineer Tony Hudson, and Threat Intel Leader with Ashland Incorporated, Nate Hosrath. The B-Sides Cincinnati May 21st conference, as we were saying, that is sold out, but there is a link to information about B-Sides conferences that are taking place in other cities, and you can find that at WVXU.org. And you can also see video from last year's B-Sides Cincinnati conference on our website. Coming up, providing hard-to-hire individuals with an opportunity to be employed. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.